So given that we are going to have to get this right, and that will be critical to the next generation of trials, what do you see as the key questions in the various subsets?
Well, you can imagine a lot of different questions. For the ER overexpressing subsets, obviously we want to optimize endocrine therapy. For the postmenopausal women, there's still sorting out to be done of how best to use AIs, whether there's any role still for tamoxifen. Are AIs all the same? What duration of treatment should we be using for either tamoxifen or an AI? Those kinds of questions. And then the very big, big question, does chemotherapy really benefit patients that are ER positive? And if so, who are those patients and how do we go about testing them?
You know, in the past, this question was approached about tamoxifen. It's still being addressed. But today, it seems like there's much more sensitivity to the issue of delayed relapse in ER-positive patients. And it seems like that's affected how people think strategically, at least compared to, say, 10 years ago. Is that your take?
I think that's right. I think one of the real lessons of the MA17 trial, which was the trial of extended adjuvant endocrine therapy for women who had finished 5 years of tamoxifen and who then went on to either a placebo or to an AI, what they showed was that an AI in that setting obviously lowered the forward-moving risk of recurrence. And it really reminded people that this is a disease where there are recurrences in years 5 through 10 and even years 10 through 15. Now, it must be said that the risk decreases as time goes by. And for women who have made it out 5, 6, 7, 8 years, they do have a lower and lower chance of recurrence as time goes by. But it's a disease with a very long natural history. So there are opportunities to intervene down the road, and that's particularly true in the ER-positive group. You know, for the ER-negative group, the recurrences are much more typically in years 2, 3, 4, 5, and if you make it to year 5, the risk doesn't go to zero, but it certainly levels out and becomes substantially less. So one of the big differences in those subsets.
Where are you right now in your own non-protocol practice of, you know, 100 postmenopausal women who come to see you to be considered for adjuvant hormonal therapy? How is it playing out? Are you starting many people initially on tamoxifen or any?
You know, I think we've learned a lot about these drugs, and the first discussion I have with patients is that they need anti-estrogen therapy. And the second is to discuss the side effect profiles of the different products. Both can cause hot flashes and night sweats and genital urinary symptoms. Tamoxifen has that slight risk of uterine cancer or thromboembolism. The aromatase inhibitors share a risk of accelerated osteoporosis and an arthralgia syndrome that we are increasingly hearing complaints about from patients, the stiffness in the hands and the joints, and also more sexual dysfunction and atrophic vaginitis. So if patients have a clear reason based on side effect profile to choose one product or another, that obviously is the place where we begin the discussion. Some patients have had tamoxifen or raloxifene in the prevention setting, so that influences my choice. Most patients have no strong reason to pick one or the other up front. And so then I discuss the options of using an AI up front or beginning with tamoxifen for a couple of years and then switching to an AI. I continue to believe that those are both very reasonable options. The differences in the risk of recurrence for the first couple of years between tamoxifen and an AI are vanishingly small. Oftentimes, patients will have preferences. They'll know someone who was on one product or another, or they've read something, and I think those are very reasonable ways to make a choice. Right now, I would guess I'm probably around 50-50, with 50% starting an AI up front and 50% starting tamoxifen for a planned couple of years and then transitioning to an aromatase inhibitor.
And I guess it's interesting because now in the last couple of years, as you know, because I believe you participated in this, we've been doing not only patterns of care studies of oncologists, but also patterns of care studies of clinical researchers who specialize in breast cancer. I think it should be said that looking at those data, those numbers and your approach, I would say is somewhat in the minority in terms of clinical researchers. There are a bunch of people who do that, but there are a lot more researchers who would go probably 75-80% AIs up front. And I know you're often involved in these sort of controversies and, meetings where it's, you know, pro and con and stuff like that. What is the kind of patient who you're starting on tamoxifen, or you just present it to everybody and sort of let them decide?
Well, I have a pretty similar discussion with most patients. Look, you know, the differences between upfront use of tamoxifen and an AI are really small. There's no survival difference. The differences in risk of recurrence over 5 years approaches 2% in the major trials. And so I think that a lot of the push for AI therapy has been a pharmaceutical-driven, advertising-driven, and data-driven process. But in terms of absolute benefit, the differences are vanishingly small. So across the board, when you look at the different settings for using an AI, upfront, after a couple of years of tamoxifen or after 5 years of tamoxifen, which the major studies have focused on, in each setting incorporated in AI does better than 5 years of tamoxifen alone. So from the get-go, I speak with patients and I say the question is not to get an AI. The question is, when should you optimally start an AI and is there still a role for tamoxifen? I don't think it's wrong to put everybody on an AI, and if doctors want to take that approach, I think that's very reasonable. There will be data coming forward before too long comparing one AI product to another, so there will be more information to guide their choices there. But I still wonder whether a planned sequential strategy might be better. There are models that have suggested it might be valuable. We are all eager to see the data from the big 198 trial that will have a planned crossover. But here's the other point, is that, as we said a few moments ago, you know, breast cancer is a disease which has a latency of 10 to 15 years. And we all want to do the right thing for our patients. But as soon as you say that, you realize that the things you do in the first 12 months, 24 months, probably don't matter nearly as much as some of the issues that you're wrestling with for questions like duration of therapy and patient selection based on biology, because those are the things that are going to be affecting the risk of recurrence over the next 15 or 20 years, which is the life course of this disease. So I think you have to put some context around that.
Yeah, it's very hard to think of anything in breast cancer where everybody agrees at this
point. What fun would that be? You wouldn't need these audio tapes. If everybody agreed, you know, we wouldn't need the program.